Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 17th of May, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we're getting a preview of some of the music you'll hear this weekend as part of the final weekend of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. Find out about the third annual wine tasting fundraiser for the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. Henry Real Bird will be here with a preview of his talk at the UAS tomorrow. We'll also hear about next Monday's mining lecture by David Stone and Scott Willis. And Nancy DeChuny will be giving us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during RSF. That writer's almanac music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies, low temperatures around 40 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with isolated showers in the afternoon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Over the angry protests of tribes, on Wednesday, the U.S. House passed its version of the Violence Against Women Act. Matt Laszlo reports that critics say the bill continues to tie the hands of tribal courts.
Republican leaders in the House refused to take up a version that passed the Senate with broad bipartisan support. Instead, they removed a provision in that bill to allow tribal courts to prosecute non-natives who abuse women in Indian country. The House bill allows Native women to appeal to U.S. district courts for protection. But critics say that isn't enough. Florida Democrat Debbie Wasserman Schultz says she never imagined she would oppose the Violence Against Women Act, which she calls valor.
Republicans in the Senate and then in the House decided to ignore the recommendations of the FBI, the Department of Justice, and advocacy groups on the ground, and push a version of VAWA that endangers immigrant women and children, ignores the needs of our Native communities, and perpetuates discrimination against LGBT victims.
In the face of a veto threat from the White House, the bill passed the House by 4 votes. Only 6 Democrats supported it. It will now need to be reconciled with the Senate version in order for the law to stay on the books. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
More than 200 people from various tribal, state, and government agencies have gathered on the Warm Springs Reservation in Oregon for the 36th Annual National Indian Timber Symposium. The group will discuss objectives, barriers, and strategies for managing the condition of the vast natural resources in and around Indian country. KWSO's William Robbins reports.
The Intertribal Timber Council was founded in Warm Springs in 1976. Since then, tribes, foresters, and natural resource advocates have gathered each year with the goal of having significant influence over the development and implementation of natural resource policy. Bobby Bruno is the Natural Resources General Manager for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs.
It goes around the country, and it's a big event, and it's important for each of the different tribes and for Warm Springs to have the group come here. It's a special thing when they do show up on your reservation to have a conference like this.
On Monday, the group attended workshops at the museum at Warm Springs, learning some traditional crafting from the Warm Springs perspective, and later attended a workshop on the cultural history, biology, and future of huckleberries, a natural food used by Northwest tribes for centuries. Tuesday's session included a keynote address by Roger Fernandez, who is the vice chair of the Wisdom of Elders and member of the Lower Elwha Band of Sklallam Indians in Port Angeles, Washington. Wednesday's activities included a tour of some ongoing projects on the Warm Springs Reservation. Included in the tour was a visit to Portland General Electric's Selective Water Withdrawal Fish Passage Project, the Moody Farm, a project to develop cropland on the Warm Springs Reservation, and the Simnasho South Fuels Reduction Project. The gathering concludes Thursday with a message from the Indian Timber Council President, the BIA, National Association of State Foresters, and other delegates. In Warm Springs, Oregon, I'm Will Robbins.
A flurry of photos overnight on the online social network site Facebook show actor Johnny Depp posing with a number of Native people who live in New Mexico. The actor is currently cultivating his role as Tonto in the film Lone Ranger, which is being touted as a role that will give a different take on the classic Native American television character. The Facebook photos show many smiles and hint at a naming ceremony associated to Comanche Way adoptions. National Native News reached out to the Comanche Nation and other recognizable faces in the photos, but no information was available at this time. Depp also met recently with Navajo tribal members during filming in Arizona. On this day in 1858, Northwest tribes defeated U.S. troops in the Battle of Pine Creek, also known as the Steptoe Battle. The conflict took place near present-day Rosalia, Washington. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
I'm Billy Mills. As a grandfather and Olympic athlete, I know the importance of keeping kids healthy. The Children's Health Insurance Program in your state can provide your child additional health coverage, such as dental care, vision care, and emergency services. Enrolling your child can also help maximize health resources at your travel clinic. To learn more, contact your clinic or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW or visit insurekidsnow.gov.
Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Final finale weekend of the Juneau Jazz and Classic Festival is this weekend. We're in the studio with me now is Dee Daniels, one of the headline performers. Dee, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine.
So you've been busy so far in town, and you get a busy evening and a busy weekend.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to everything.
So you're from the Seattle area originally?
Well, I started my career in Seattle. I was born and raised in Berkeley, California. But my family moved to Seattle when I was 17, and I started my career out of Seattle, so I call it home.
What got you hooked on music?
I've always been hooked on music, and I'm not sure. Well, I can say I grew up in church, and we were always involved. We had to be involved in some activity in church. So I could sing, and I got in choir when I was just about probably 6 or 7 years old, sang my first solo at 9, and sang in school choirs. My stepfather was a Baptist minister, so any black Baptist minister in California, if they have any kids, at least one is going to play piano and sing. So that was me. I'm the eldest of 5. And but I love singing, but my passion growing up was art. So my degree is in art education. And it wasn't until after I started teaching at one of the high schools in Seattle just for a year that I realized my true calling and got into music, and that's all I've done ever since.
Your style is a mix of blues and jazz and symphonic music and solo stuff and all sorts of music.
All sorts of stuff, big band, you name it.
You also put out a CD of a performance of Disney-related material.
Disney-related? Mm-hmm. I did a concert with the Munich Film Orchestra. And Disney music.
What's your favorite Disney movie?
Oh, Lord. I can't even remember. I've seen them all, though, because I have a daughter. And I've seen them all probably 50 times each.
Now, Linda Rosendahl is the artistic director for the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival, and you have an honor of being an artistic director yourself. Is that true?
Yes, of the Frank DeMiro Jazz Festival in Edmonds, Washington. And that just started this year, I'm very happy to say. And we had a very successful festival this year, which is the first weekend of March. And we had about 75 schools participating. So, yeah, we were... I was very excited about that.
You're comfortable playing the piano in a solo setting and as well as the symphonic works?
I am. It doesn't matter, really. I just have to practice a little bit when I know I'm going to be playing solo. But, no, I enjoy that. It offers me a different kind of freedom when I play for myself, because I can be totally spontaneous, and I just be in the moment completely. Whereas, with an orchestra or even with one other person, I'll make it more than one, let's say 2 or 3 other people, you agree on an arrangement, so to speak, and it's a little bit difficult to get too far out of that, in the moment. So, but I only do arrangements that I like anyway, so I'm always enjoying myself. But when I go completely solo, then, there's that in-the-moment spontaneity that can happen.
How do you go about arranging something for your style?
I just simply sit down at the piano, and once I decide on the key, I just start playing, literally. I just start playing, and one thing leads to another. Maybe it might be a particular voicing of a chord. It might be putting what I end up doing for the introduction of the song. And I really enjoy vamps at the end of tunes, and I always have to watch myself that I don't vamp out every tune. But when I just sit down and just start playing repetitiously, it kind of zone out, and all kinds of wonderful things happen, you know. And I've learned over time that I should always have my tape recorder on.
You schedule for a number of important gigs, I guess, this weekend. Starting at 5:15 today at Chapel by the Lake, you could be doing a vocal workshop.
That's correct. Yeah, so that's open to the public, and we invite anyone who sings or would like to sing to come down.
What's the secret of singing successfully? Can you see the secrets of scat, perhaps?
The secret of scat, well, I think there's probably a couple of secrets, but one is to know the melody. Another is to understand that scat is a continuation of the story of the song without words. A lot of people don't quite get that, I don't think, anyway, and so they just go all over the place. But it's a continuation, a more complex look at the melody, but also, more importantly to me, is the sentiment and the story of the song as we know it vocally. That I would say those are the two or three most important things, you know. And then, of course, you can improve your skill, you know. And then there's various ways to do that. But if you don't have the heart of the feeling of the story, what you're talking about in the first place, I don't think you can continue on with scat. You know, it just becomes a series of riffs and random notes and intervals, you know, but it has no heart, no soul, no meaning, no feeling to it.
And also on Friday night at the Juno Arts and Culture Center at 8 o'clock, you'll be performing with the Barney McClure Trio.
That's correct. I'm looking forward to that. Barney and I have a great long relationship that starts in Seattle pretty close to the beginning of my career, you know. And so for me to be able to share the stage with him tomorrow night will be a little bit of joy.
What are some of your inspirations besides the church?
Various kinds. I enjoy good music, period. And it doesn't have to be jazz. I didn't start out being a jazz singer. The first band I sang with was a serious rock and roll of the day and a little R&B thrown on the side. And jazz was an evolution. I went from the R&B rock and roll thing to pop music of the day, the top 40 they used to call it. And from that, because I was working six nights a week, week after week after week, I just started kind of toying with the melody to keep myself from being bored, you know. And the next thing I know, the media began referring to me as a jazz singer, and I was a little perturbed about that, you know, until my coattails got pulled by one of the older musicians in Seattle, and he said, you ought to take that as a compliment. You know, jazz is the music. You know, that's the real deal, and it's the American art form and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I started listening, and because I came from a gospel blues, a pop, rock, R&B background, the first jazz music I listened to was the artists that were on the CTI label at the time, you know, which was Grover Washington, Freddie Hubbard, and people like that, you know, because it still had a little bit of Crusaders, you know, it still had some groove to it that I could relate to, you know. And I branched out from there into the singers and so forth. So, yeah, I feel pretty rounded out musically.
That's good, and you can find out a little bit more about D. Daniel's Inner Music tonight at 5:15 at the Chapel by the Lake. It's a workshop on jazz vocals, and at 8 o'clock on Friday night at the Juno Arts and Culture Center as part of the Barney McClure Trio, and is with playing with the Barney McClure Trio. And those concerts, if you need more information on that, you can find out at www.jazzandclassics.org. D. Daniel, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
The pleasure's all mine.
love you like nobody's loved you, come rain or come shine. High as a mountain and deep as a river, come rain or come shine. I guess when you met me, it was just one of those things. But don't ever bet me, 'cause I'm gonna be true if you let me. You're gonna love me like nobody's loved me, come rain or come shine. Happy together, unhappy together, and won't it be fine? Days may be cloudy or sunny, yeah. Can't know we're out of the money, but I'm with you always. I'm with you come rain or shine.
You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. That was a little bit of the music of Dee Daniels. She's doing a vocal workshop tonight at 5:15 in the Chapel by the Lake, and also a concert with the Barnum McClure Trio tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. I'm honored to have with me in the studio Henry Realbert. He's going to be doing a presentation tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the U.S. Eagan Lecture Hall titled Horses, Language, and Life. Also in the studio, this is Joel Bennett. Joel, thank you very much for coming down the station, Henry, and I'm honored to have you in the room with us.
You're welcome, Jeff.
First of all, Joel, could you explain how you came up with To Meet Henry?
I had the idea of going to Montana and retracing the last 3 days of Custer's ride to the Little Bighorn. And I just basically started to investigate who might accompany me or how I might do that. And I, through a number of people there, I was able to fortunately reach Henry, and we did that. We had a wonderful trip, and I've spent the last 4 or 5 years doing other horse trips with him in the area, and we've become friends. And I thought it was time for him to see big country up here in Alaska, so that's why he's here.
Henry, could you describe your background, please?
What?
Could you describe your background?
My background... I'm a Crow Indian, and I grew up over at Crow Agency, Montana. And I grew up on the Little Bighorn River, the land of the Shining Mountains, the Bighorn Mountains. And I grew up in Montana, yeah.
What got you started writing poetry?
I started writing poetry when I was in traction in the Indian hospital in Crow Agency. Looking at the ceiling, a girl brought over a poem to me. That was in June of 69. But through school, I've done haikus and everything else. But there, I just started. She gave me that poem, and then she went out and killed herself a couple of days later. And so that's how powerful that piece was that she made, reaching out and giving me her thought before she left type of thing. And that really really touched me to where, and the old man, there's an old man that a blind man would tell stories and bring in all the senses and touch your heart to where he told the story and another old man was crying. And so to be able to do that before all of the tape recorders and all of the cell phones and everything else like that, just the voice and the thought to create that image and to the emotion, to touch the emotion. And that's where I come from, yeah.
You were Montana's Poet Laureate from 2009 through last work. Did that affect your poetry?
No, it didn't affect my poetry because I was doing it. I was living it. I was living life out on the mountains and the plains of Montana there. And so when that honor was bestowed upon me, I just lived the way I'd been living all the time. I dropped out of society from 82 until 86 because it was so corrupt, and I just wrote poems, took care of horses and cattle, and just wrote poems, and that's how, and so it didn't make no difference to me, no.
It's kind of hard to drop out of society when you're poet laureate. What kind of things do you have to do as poet laureate?
Promote poetry in the state of Montana, to take poetry out into remote areas of Montana, and to show the people that poetry does exist in places where they don't even expect. I mean, just in riddles and lullabies and things like that, yeah.
Our own writer laureate, Peggy Schumacher, writes poetry deeply rooted in the Alaska landscape and her experiences, mostly in interior Alaska. She lives in Fairbanks. Your poetry is deeply rooted in Montana land and the culture. Is there a way for Alaska's residents and Native peoples to relate to your broad big sky poetry and plains people?
The work that I'm doing is life on the plains and to be out here, the landscape of the sea, of buffalo grass out in northern Montana, a bluff sticking out on the Missouri like a cruise ship. No.
You don't have many cruise ships in Montana, I imagine.
No, we don't have any cruise ships in Montana, but we had the bull boat. The bull boat, that's what we had. We had willow or chokecherry frame with buffalo hide on there, and sort of like a kayak that they have up here. But that's what we call the bull boat to cross the wide Missouri and the Yellowstone, the treacherous Yellowstone. Yellowstone's the only river up in Montana that hasn't been dammed, yeah.
You're bilingual, you speak Crow and also English. How does that affect your work?
The thought pattern of the Crow Indian in the descriptive language, the words, were sparkles of my work. I mean, they enhance my work. It's something that I rely on. Sometimes just like. When I first started out, I wrote about the lonesome. The word lonesome, it's there, lonesome. But in Crow, it's me, BJJ suck. That means me, I do not look like myself. The reflection that I'm casting is not who I want. And so that's the word lonesome. And so, but where that came out was this old man. One time I asked him at the racetrack, what he was doing there, and he said, "Be what you heech got it, but as a native was suck, but I want to be driftwood. I am like my heart's way. I can't do. I'm catching a ride." And that's when, that was 1975. And that's when those took, and here I'd been reading Kipling and Poe and Longfellow and all those other writers in school. And I was searching somewhere else. It was inside of me. And so then how we do it is we ask for thoughts. And so I buy phrases or whatever, you know. And so I gave that old man $20 and said, "Dad, I want those group of words." And he said, "Yeah, I give you those group of words, and I'm going to ask for more beautiful thoughts for you." And so that's why I'm sitting here right now. Yeah.
I'm talking to Henry Realbird. He's going to be doing a talk tomorrow night at the University of Alaska Southeast. Are you going to lecture all? We picked out a poem for you to read. Can you share it with us, please?
The selection of poem, this poem here,
mm-hmm.
This is a beautiful one. I decorate thought to where sometimes I see him again and I love him, just like Omaha reflection. Sitting out here alone with my feelings in the moon, let me whisper a feeling in your ear to touch your heart with the feelings in the moon. From feeling in your beauty, rose, to color feelings transpose. But until the shine returns to the ice through the sun, feeling set in time, as morning arrives, I straddle the line back done. The blackbird raven took away the wrong feeling as drum beats slowly on down through memories. Horse tracks and mud smooth out in winter snow, for the grass will grow and feelings will flow over horse tracks in the mine. I remembered a rainbow of feelings that sparkled and flew out of my heart, but horse tracks in the mine smooth out in rain and snow. Feeling in buffalo grass remains to lie in rosebud petals of dreams embedded in sweet sage and wild peppermint. The scent of love is in the wind from the Sierras to the Charles River. Your feeling is in the moon. I walk out on the reflection of the moon." That's it. But now what I'm going to do is I'm going to add, "I walk on the reflection of the moon on the river here." And that way I'll have Alaska in here. This is talking about from California clear over to the Pacific to the Atlantic down in the lower 48. And so now I'm going to put Alaska in here. No. But as I'm doing it, I keep changing things, you know, but yeah.
And we're talking to Henry Realbird. He's going to be doing a presentation tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the U.S. Aiken Lecture Hall. It's absolutely free. Henry Realbird and Joel Bennett, thank you very much for being on the station with us today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 17th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of Gary Paulsen, born in Minneapolis, 1939. Ran away from home when he was 14, joined the carnival, worked as a construction worker, engineer, sailor. He was a ranch hand, working nights as a satellite technician for an aerospace company in California, when he was struck by the inspiration to become a writer. He walked off the job, never went back. He's written more than 200 books. Gary Paulsen says, "I just work. I don't drink. I don't fool around. the end result is there's a lot of books out there. Most recent novels, Woods Runner, Lawn Boy Returns, and Liar, Liar. It's the birthday of Dennis Potter, born in Gloucestershire, England, 1935, best known for his series Pennies from Heaven, about a sheet music salesman, and The Singing Detective. It's the birthday of the woman who was given credit for writing the first stream-of-consciousness novel in English, Dorothy Richardson, born Abingdon, just south of Oxford, 1873, the novel Pointed Roofs, published in 1915. She disliked the term stream of consciousness. She referred to it as an interior monologue. Pointed Roofs was the first in a 13-novel series called Pilgrimage, based on Richardson's life. Virginia Woolf credited Dorothy Richardson with inventing the psychological sentence of the feminine gender. It was on this date, 1954, the Supreme Court ruled that school segregation violated the 14th Amendment. An 8-year-old girl named Linda Brown in Topeka, Kansas, had to walk 21 blocks every day to an all-black elementary school, though she lived just 7 blocks from another elementary school for white children. Her father, Oliver Brown, asked that she be allowed to attend the white school. The principal refused, so he sued in court, and it came to the Supreme Court. The legal basis for segregation came from an 1896 Supreme Court decision, Plessy v. Ferguson, establishing that separate facilities for black and white students were constitutional as long as they were equal. When Brown v. Board of Education came before the Supreme Court in 1952, most of the justices were personally opposed to segregation, but only 4 of them openly supported overturning that precedent. And then in September 1953, Chief Justice Fred Vinson died of a heart attack. President Eisenhower nominated Earl Warren as the new Chief Justice, a man who devoted himself to the cause of civil rights. Warren's vote made the decision 5-4, but Justice Warren wanted a unanimous decision, so he rounded up the votes. The final holdout was Justice Stanley Reed from Kentucky, and when the decision was read, Justice Reed burst into tears. Here's a poem for today by Kathleen Flanagan, Natural History. When I die, lava will flow and preserve me whole for 50,000 years. I'll be exhibited in a great museum next to the whale bones and amethyst geodes. You will be pinned with the butterflies, handled with gloves, exquisitely fragile. Isn't it funny? They'll never connect us, this rock woman with that paper man. They were never in love. She would have pounded him into dust. He'd have been crushed by a woman like that. Natural History by Kathleen Flanagan, from her collection Famous, published by University of Nebraska Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. And by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses manage their reputations online, because search results can be the new first impression. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:34, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Pat Harris and Meryl Jensen here to talk about a third annual wine tasting fundraiser for the Jensen Olson Arboretum coming up this Monday. That's not Monday, it's coming up this in the next couple of days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Thursday, the 24th.
That's around the corner.
Yep.
Mary, you want to talk about the Arboretum and the number of plants you have?
Yeah, the Arboretum, over the course of the last 5 years since we've opened, we've put in 13 new beds and approximately 30 new trees, and we're really expanding the primrose collection. We're just shy of 100 species and cultivars that are out there, So we've got primrose that bloom from late April through September. So it's a great primrose show, and it just kind of sequentially blooms throughout the season. So it's a lot of fun.
Define cultivar.
Cultivar is a cultivated variety. It's so if you've got Primula vulgaris, there are different cultivars where they take the original plant and the plant breeders start coming up with different variations on the theme. So instead of a kind of a creamy yellow flower, it's more of a bright yellow flower.
Both of you can chime in on this, the importance of the arboretum to Juno.
The arboretum is important to Juno. It's a living laboratory. We have lots of classrooms that come out, take advantage of the space. Not only can they learn about botany, forestry, geology, but since we're right there on the water, we have been having seaweed classes have been coming out and learning about the intertidal zone. And then they get to learn about plants while they're out there also. So it's a multi-use facility.
Directions to the arboretum?
We're out at mile 23 out the road. We're just past the shrine. When you get out there, go past the shrine, and we're 8/10 of a mile. We have a highway sign, and you come down the lane and come out and enjoy the vistas.
Your hours?
We're Wednesday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're closed Mondays and Tuesdays to do noisy maintenance, so you guys don't have to, when you come out to visit, you don't have to listen to us mowing the lawn, edging the lawn, things like that.
And we're talking about the arboretum, but the fundraiser itself is going to be held at Glacier Gardens?
Yes, it's going to be at Glacier Gardens. We don't have an inside facility to host something like that, so Glacier Gardens is a superb place for that.
And you want to give us details on the event, please?
Sure. It's going to be on the 24th of May, and that's a Thursday, and it's from 6 to 9 p.m., and tickets are going very fast. We're very excited about that. But they're available from the Jack and from Hearthside Books and also from Rainy Day Retreat, I think, books as well.
Yeah.
Plus some of the board members still have tickets, too.
So the Friends of the Jensen Olson Arboretum is a branch of the fundraising branch of the organization.
Yeah, we're a separate nonprofit group, so we are not the official board of the Arboretum. We're a separate nonprofit group. So some of us overlap on both, which is kind of fun. We're separate.
Any other memberships?
We do, and this is also what we're doing this year. We are trying to build our membership. So we have several different levels of membership, starting at $15. And if people want to join Friends of the Arboretum, we really welcome them. And if you join at the $30 level, you'll also get a discount on the wine tasting ticket. So that's another good deal for you if you're interested in that.
And the wine tasting is happening next Thursday?
Yes. Yep.
All right.
6 to 9.
And tickets can be gotten at Retreat Books and also Hearthside Books?
Yep. And also if you know some board members, I think there's a few tickets out from them as well. So, please come and join us. It's going to be a great evening. Going to be the grounds are going to be open, so people can look around a little bit at the garden and just enjoy the ambiance. It's just a wonderful place out there.
And you got a special day coming up in the near future. Is that true, Meryl?
Yes, on Saturday, May 26th, it's Alaska Public Gardens Day, and we invite the gardening public or anybody just to come out and enjoy being out at the Arboretum. We'll have Beth Cortula out. She'll have a couple of words to say. We'll have a little more or less a Alaska Public Gardens Day dedication ceremony at 11 a.m. in the morning. We'll also do a couple of tours. We'll do a tour on the history of the Arboretum, including the Peterson family, the Olson family, and the Jensen family, and then a cool plants tour where I'll take you around and show you some of my favorite plants out there.
All right. And you have a website?
We don't have an official website, but we have a de facto web presence through Facebook. So just search Jensen Olson Arboretum on Facebook, and that'll bring up images of what's currently in bloom.
All right. Pat Harrison and Meryl Jensen, thank you for coming by and talking about the fundraiser for the Friends of the Jensen Olson Arboretum next Thursday. And tickets, when are the hours again?
The hours of the
event?
Event, it's 6 to 9.
Okay. Uh-huh. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, it's just that we hope to see Juno out there and enjoy the ambiance out there. It's going to be great. So.
Yep, and come enjoy the Arboretum. Everything's looking beautiful this year.
Celebrate spring, yeah.
Summer and fall.
Time is 3:42, and you're tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about a mining lecture coming up next Monday at David Stone and Scott Willis, and also Alicia Jones from the Juneau Douglas City Museum. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
So this is we couldn't figure it out whether this is the 14th or the 15th one.
There's been a lot.
And this is all talk about mining in the capital city.
Yes, this is a kind of off and on for the last 14 to 15 years. We've done the City Museum has partnered with David Stone to do a mining lecture, and around I think about 2005, we also began partnering with Hecla Greens Creek to co-sponsor this annual lecture, and this year, every year we try to do a little bit different focus, whether it's the personalities that are associated with Juneau's mining history or the technology, and this year we're focusing on the power, so hydropower, and how that has impacted the mining.
Scott, do you want to talk a little bit about the effect of hydropower, how it started?
Well, yeah, the mines needed a lot of power, and we think we sort of invented the concept of renewable energy today, but even 100 years ago they knew that they were better off developing a local hydropower that they didn't have to buy fuel for, then bringing fuel up from down south.
What was the first source of hydropower?
The Treadwell mine was the first one I've seen. They talked about electrifying, having lights in the mine so they could work later, and so it was water from the Treadwell ditch.
Was it a high-tech solution?
It was for that time, yes.
Could you describe the basic setup?
Well, so the Treadwell ditch started sort of over almost all the way to Eagle Crest and kind of ran along Douglas Island, and every creek that came down they would put into the ditch, and then by the time it got to Treadwell they put it into pipes, and that provided power both for hydromechanical energy as well as hydroelectric energy when they started using that technology.
David Stone, you also could be involved talking about the mines. What was your
So the difference between this talk and the sort of what traditionally I've done for the City Museum is that Scott's going to focus on the various forms of power technology as we go through the history of the mines, and I'm going to focus on what it was used for. For instance, the Treadwell Ditch was originally hydromechanical power, which would drive the stamp mills directly, and belt drive accessory parts of the mill, and then eventually it would be electrified. And so you saw the technology advance through time where the Alaska Juneau mine would really get sophisticated. They would have, for instance, they built an electric compressor back in the Perseverance section of the mine in the 30s. They put in a big electric 800 horsepower hoist to hoist from the deep levels of the mine, and we'll just go through, okay, what did they use the power for, and how was it helpful to them? The stability of their costs were really critically important, because these were very, very low grade mines. They mined on a very large scale, but they were marginally profitable.
At what point does Salmon Creek come in?
We'll be talking about that also, and that, you know, Salmon Creek, the first unit came online in very early 1913, so it's almost 100 years old, and yet it's still, parts of that project still produce power for us today. And so that's one thing I find interesting is that what the mines did nearly 100 years ago still has an influence on the community today, and some of the relationships between the mine and power and the community, we still have some of those same types of relationships today, and we'll be talking about that also.
How much of an advantage was the city itself able to take from the electricity generated by the hydropower?
Well, that's part of it. So when the mines had surplus energy, they were able to sell that to AEL&P to sell to the community. Now we sort of do it in reverse, and when we have surplus energy, we sell it to Greens Creek Mine.
And your talk starts on Monday at 7 o'clock?
Yes.
Is there a charge to get in?
There is. It's $10 for adults, and then seniors and youth are $7. And it is going to be at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, so it will not be at the actual City Museum.
All righty. Anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, we hope folks will turn out, and maybe we can get some bad weather so they'll really want to turn out. But this is for a good cause. This is for the City Museum. And so I think not only is it educational, but it's great to support the museum.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Get rich quick. If you dig with a shovel or a pick.
In a mine.
Where a million diamonds shine.
We dig from early morn till night.
We dig up everything you'll find.
We dig up diamonds, finds more.
Thousands, rubies, sometimes more.
But we don't know what we dig them for.
We dig.
It's 3:49, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. In the studio with me is Nancy DeJourney from the Juneau Arts and Amenities Council here to talk about things that are going on in the capital city.
Sun. We got sun.
We got raisins in the sun.
We got sun.
And this is a big weekend, folks, so get ready. Tonight it's the Genius of Shostakovich, the classical concert with Jazz and Classics. When I last checked at 1 o'clock, there were only 20 tickets left, so if you're interested in that, better get going. Little Norway Festival is beginning over in Petersburg, in case you're headed in that direction. This is the Femme Fatale weekend. There's an amateur night tonight at the Rendezvous, and then three different shows throughout the weekend. This is a fundraiser for the 4As. You can get more information about that on our website. Friday, it begins Southeast Alaska Beer Week, and there's a whole bunch of things going on. I don't have all the details on the little piece of paper in front of me, but if you go to our website and click on one of the announcements for Beer Week, all of the different things are listed out there. On Friday is also Museum Snapshot Day. The 1st of May is Museum Day, and they took a bunch of pictures, and they're going to show them all on Friday. Anyway, go to your museum. The Last Chance Mining Museum is free on Friday, starting at 11. There's a Jazz and Classics noon concert out at the Nugget Mall, which is free. Maritime Festival, which got sort of over-maritimed last weekend, is going to be out at be here on Marine Park from 3 to 9 p.m. Friday evening. Should be a lovely evening to be out there. We've got the Flying Scotsman. It's Bike to Work Week, and this is a film being presented by the Juno Freewheelers at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. Tom Loker's up on a tram at 5:30. The Wish Canadi Poetry Slam and Open Mic theme this month is I Like It Hot, and they're going to perform at it at the Ock Bay Fire Station. So go on out there and do your poetry thing. And speaking of poetry, at 7 p.m. on Friday night, it's Henry Realbird. He's the Cowboy Poet of the Year from Montana, and he will be at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall starting at 7. That's a free event as well, so you can go do I Like It Hot and then whiz over and do cowboys, I guess. Bigfoot and the Other Lost Souls is running this whole weekend as well, and if you haven't seen it, do go make the opportunity to go see it. It's very funny, and lots of sort of witty things going on there.
It's not for kids.
It's not for kids, but it's definitely funny and good music and all sorts of stuff. Barney McClure is on at 8 o'clock with his trio and Dee Daniels. Sammy Kanine Baker came by the other day. Many of you know her. She's a cruise ship performer, has been for years and years. Says Dee is fabulous. She's known her for a long time and not to be missed. So 8 o'clock at the Jack, and again, that's a limited seating opportunity, so don't go without getting tickets. Astronomers at the Alaskan Bar at 9 o'clock, and Mayfest is continuing over at Petersburg at Keto's Cave, and the Femme Fatale show is on Friday night at the Rendezvous at 10. Saturday, boy, are there a lot of things going on, and most of them are sort of out the road in the valley and other sort of not downtown locations. Community Day on Campus starts at 11. But even before that, at 7 in the morning, you can go to the Montana Creek Community Gardens and learn about banding songbirds. It's International Migratory Bird Day, and they have a presentation out there. The 21st Annual Seacoast Relay Southeast Roadrunners starts out at 9 a.m. at Lena Picnic Area, and it will end at the campus as part of Community Day. Something new this year out at Eagle Beach, Art in the Park. This is being sponsored by the Park Service, and you can get more information about that by calling. There's a number on our website you can get. Nugget Mall is having a used boat and outdoor gear show all weekend. Starts at 10, goes all day. Go ahead and go check that out. And as I mentioned, it's the 11th annual Community Day on Campus. We have all sorts of exciting and weird things going on out there, ranging from the usual touch tanks. We don't have ponies this year because the ponies are going to be at Family Farm Day at Swampy Acres, which is just before on the way to the campus. And one of the things about the campus I want to make sure people know is you can't come in through the Chapel by the Lake anymore. You need to drive around on Back Loop Road and come in on the back side, which is now going to be the regular way to get to campus, so don't be taken in by that. It's at 2 p.m. and at 6 p.m., the Art for Kids Spring Recital, Proud to Be an American, is at the Thunder Mountain High School. At 3 p.m., it's the Arctic Tern Celebration. This is at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitors Covered Pavilion. The Arctic Terns are coming back. Beautiful birds, always fun to watch those. At 4 p.m., Art in the 21st Century. This is the third in the PBS series. It's being hosted by Rob Royce. It's at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. They'll be swing dancing at the Rookery. Dan Hobson's doing classical guitar. We got Bully showing at Goldtown Nickelodeon. It sounds like a pretty serious and moving film. You have a couple of opportunities to see that, 7 and 9:30 on Saturday. It's also playing on Friday and a couple of other times. At 8 o'clock Saturday is the conclusion to the Jazz and Classics Festival, and I must say it's been a great one this year. LaVey Smith and her Red Hot Skillet Liquors. Say that several times fast.
I'm not going to try.
Okay, me either. But I would have to say I've been listening to little snippets from her website, and she's phenomenal. It's going to be great. So a great way to end up the festival this year. At 9 p.m., there's Bad Larry and KXLL presenting A Trip South over at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, and Astronomar is over at the Alaskan Bar. Sunday, it's the Second Chance. That last weekend just was just miserable. So you got a Second Chance on the Super Plant sale. It's out at the Safeway parking lot at 10 a.m. on Sunday. At 3 p.m., the Juneau Wind Ensembles is doing a concert, and I believe it's a pay-as-you-can event. They will be performing with middle school, Floyd Rider Middle School folks. Also, at 7:30, Notorious is in concert. This is being presented by the Gold Street Music People at the Resurrection Lutheran Church. It's $10. You get your tickets at the door. And you were just talking with David Stone and Scott Willis and Alicia about the museum presentation on Monday. Tuesday, Yellow Submarine and a concert at Goldtown Nickelodeon. That's going to run Tuesday and Wednesday at 7 p.m., I guess, at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. Colette and friends will be performing. Let's see. There is an organizational meeting for people who want to be part of the Sunday Market this year. It's at noon on Wednesday at the Jack. Please come by if you're interested. Thursday, there is the Scientists in Action, Exploring the Red Planet. This is at the Valley Library. It's free. It's limited, however, to 30 people. They're bringing it should be pretty exciting. It's all about Mars. And you were just talking with the Jensen Olsen Arboretum people about their wine tasting on Thursday. So, pretty exciting week.
Sunday also is the Second Chance Plant Sale at the Juneau Community Garden, and that starts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
1 o'clock rather than 10.
This is the Juneau Community Garden one.
Oh, the Juneau Community Garden. So we have lots of plants. It's just, it's time to plant because suddenly it's sunny outside. It's maybe your only opportunity, I guess.
All right, Nancy DeTourney, thank you for coming by.
And always go to our website for more information. Thanks, Jeff.
I'm going to the music of Barney McClure winding up our Juneau Afternoon program for Thursday. Tonight at 7 on Alaska Identity Project, host Adrian Lopez will interview the author. My paper's out of the way here. Adrian Lopez will interview David Damore, research team leader for the Watershed Management Program with the Forest Service. She'll also be talking to jazz pianist Barney McClure in town for the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on KTOO News. You're tuned to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Stavis listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sursuna at 91.9. Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also live on the line at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, we'll learn about Community Day at UAS with guest Katie Bosler. Gwen Bayless will be here to let us know about activities and surrounding Saturday's International Migratory Bird Day. We'll skip a preview of Saturday's Juneau Jazz and Classics Grand Finale Concert and Dance by LaVey Smith and the Red Hot Skillet Liquors. And we'll get the details about this weekend's Femme Fatale event at the Rendezvous. Edward's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. For the forecast for tonight, looks like mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 42 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with isolated showers in the afternoon. Saturday looks like mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain. Sunday and Sunday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today, and have a pleasant evening.
Marines, they know what the threat is. It's not so much outside. It could be a threat on the inside. They're